Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 9th. Jury says, Wilson not guilty of murder. Verdict concluding high-profile case comes after 90-minute deliberation. The story was written by Iris Foster. A Midland County jury stated that David Wilson is not guilty of murder in the shooting death of Officer Nathan Hayden Heidelberg. The verdict came after 90 minutes of deliberations as the jury was sent off to deliberate at 4:25 p.m. after emotional and dramatic closing arguments. The jury's decision marked the end of one of the most high-profile cases in recent Midland County history. Defense attorney Brian Carney said Wilson is very relieved and grateful for the outcome. Quote, "It's nice that this case is finally over and that the jury saw the true facts," Carney stated. District Attorney Laura Nodolf said she had always believed that this case should be tried by a jury that would weigh the evidence and hold trial participants to the burden of proof. While she said her office hoped for a different result because a policeman died, perhaps the message is that we should all be responsible gun owners. Before the case was sent to the jury for deliberations, the defense called several character witnesses to attest to Wilson's honesty and peaceable, law-abiding nature, which provided him with a good reputation in both Midland and Snyder, his hometown. The jury heard from his former employer and partner, Carl Smith, co-founder of Ira Pump and Supply, Jalen Hogan, executive director of High Sky Children's Ranch, engineer Angel Valles, former Midland City Councilman Barry Simpson, Snyder dairy farmer Will Collier, oilman Todd Cage, and Dale Redman. Judge Tryon Lewis read the 22-page court charge that included the law of self-defense, use of reasonable belief, the felony offense of deadly conduct, the defense of third party, and the defense of personal property. Since more than 6 days of trial had featured numerous projected images, closing arguments followed suit. For the state, Prosecutor Andrew Vanderhoven presented a PowerPoint that further illustrated the court charge. First slide showed three ways to commit murder. 1. Intentionally or knowingly kill. 2. Intend to cause serious bodily injury. 3. Intentionally commit deadly conduct that causes death. He commented that fear and panic are not a license to kill. As he ran through the timeline of the events of March 5, 2019, he said that the Castle Doctrine did not apply in this case, nor did defense of property, since the doorbell was rung. Defense attorney Daniel Hurley's first PowerPoint slide focused on the case from Wilson's point of view that night, not in hindsight. He told the jury the situation doesn't have to be actual, just apparent, and what the defendant perceived. He said that when police procedure and the Castle Doctrine are opposed, the jury is bound to follow Texas's strong Castle Doctrine. It also overrides gun safety concerns. Furthermore, Hurley stated, Wilson had the right to use deadly force against force, in this case, the push of the front door lever, which occurred twice. Defense attorney Brian Carney sobbed as he revealed he had known Heidelberg. He was also a former neighbor of Wilson, and he blamed the state for subjecting both families to this trial, stating, quote, "Fear can make you do things you otherwise wouldn't do." Carney reminded jurors of the soundproof walls, the 40-foot distance from the master closet to the front door, the fight-or-flight response of Wilson's body when he realized the threat at the front door was between him and his daughter's bedrooms, and the refraction of light bouncing off decorative mirrors into his eyes. Regarding the initial interviews with Ranger Cody Allen, Carney said the Texas Ranger was unable to rule out the possibility that the defendant couldn't hear the MPD announcement or the fear that he had about an attempted unlawful entry. PPO Victoria Ali told Allen much the same thing about the defendant's fear. Carney concluded by saying that the verdict cannot be about the death of a police officer or what jurors themselves would have done. Deliberations must focus on Wilson's point of view. District Attorney Laura Nodolf gave a dramatic speech with slides asking what ordinary and prudent people would do. She reminded jurors that all reasonable doubt, not all possible doubt, is the standard they must agree on. She acknowledged one can be afraid of a lot of things, but not justified to act. She concluded by saying that the defendant decided he was going to shoot whatever was out there when he exited the closet. A packed courtroom, including a blue line of at least 24 uniformed-clad MPD officers and Chief Seth Herman, heard closing arguments. For the entirety of the trial, both sides of the aisle had been full of relatives, friends, and associates of the two families. All of a sudden, it was standing room only. Tours show producers' efforts to winterize Midland facilities. Insulation, windbreaks, among actions to avoid production outages. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. The temperatures were mild Wednesday, but the freezing temperatures of February's winter storm Uri were not far from the thoughts of Texas oil and gas operators and electric grid operators. In the aftermath of Uri's impact on the state's energy industry, from the wellhead to the light switch, the industry is eager to show how they are preparing for future severe weather events. To that end, the Texas Oil and Gas Association held a winter-ready winterization press tour of Ovintiv and Diamondback Energy Production facilities in Midland County. Ovintiv said that it had approximately 80% of its production still online on February 14th when power to its facilities was lost, knocking production offline. Likewise, Diamondback had 90% of its production still online when power was lost. Diamondback added that when third-party partners, which take the company's crude, water, and natural gas production, also lost power, the company had no choice but to shut in wells. Since the liquids come out of the wellhead at 100 to 150 degrees, they would have continued to flow if not for the loss of power, Diamondback personnel said. Diamondback has used an extensive winterization checklist since 2014, and at its Gridiron North battery, personnel showed some of those measures, including insulating meters, injecting methanol into the pipes, which acts much as antifreeze does in automobiles, and building shelters for its equipment. The bottoms of the vessels will also be insulated. Approximately 95% of Diamondback's production is carried through pipes buried at least 3 feet underground, insulating them from extreme temperatures. The Gridiron North battery takes in production from 9 wells to the west, with 10 additional wells expected to come online. At Ovintiv's Abbey Lane site, personnel displayed the methanol injection atomizers, insulation to be placed around meters, and infrared thermometers and cameras linked to iPhones and iPads to alert field personnel to temperature changes. A number of Ovintiv's Permian Basin field personnel came from the company's Colorado operations, so they are accustomed to cold weather. Ovintiv pointed out that production is actually more vulnerable to downtime in the summer months, which brings electrical storms, rain, high winds, and high temperatures. Both companies said efforts are also made to station personnel closer to sites in case of issues, but only if it's not dangerous for them to travel to the site. The events in February show how complex the supply chain is and how failure of one part will affect all the other pieces, said Todd Staples, president of TXOGA. Quote, it's a complex supply chain to move natural gas from the Permian Basin 600 miles, he said. The operators, quote, have built a great depth of winterization technology, methanol injection, insulation, windbreaks, Staples said. Staples said one of the benefits coming from the legislation enacted after the storm was significant improvement in communications between operators, processors, power generators, and grid operators. Facilities like Ovintiv's Abbey Lane and Diamondback's Gridiron North are now eligible to receive critical load designation, something he called a game-changer that will alert power distributors like Oncor and Texas New Mexico Power that they should not lose electricity in load-shedding events. Staples praised the Railroad Commission's efforts in seeing that companies list their facilities. There is a mapping project led by the Commission, Public Utility Commission, and Electric Reliability Council of Texas to map all assets that make up the electric supply chain. Though that project is not due to end until next September, Staples said the current critical designation effort, plus the mapping, quote, equals mandatory winterization, end quote.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday. Diamondback and Pioneer come through for city. Stuart Doreen, editor. The bar keeps rising for energy company philanthropy in Midland, and doesn't it feel good? It never gets old writing about the contributions that companies are making in Midland and the region. Philanthropy is where this community can match above ground what is accomplished below ground, and the energy companies are continuing to make their mark. Last month, Diamondback Energy announced it would commit $2.5 million to the renovation of Hogan Park, a priority for the City of Midland and the newly formed Quality of Place Conservancy. This week it was Pioneer Natural Resources' turn. Pioneer donated 35.52 acres in the eastern part of the city to Midland Habitat for Humanity. The donation, valued at nearly $2 million, is the largest land donation ever received by the nonprofit. It will be a lot of houses, said Joey Hopkins, executive director of Midland Habitat for Humanity. It will be the biggest subdivision we've ever built, and the biggest new subdivision built in this part of town. Parks, check. Affordable housing, check. And these are not the exceptions but the rule, and Midlanders should celebrate those companies that give back to the city and region that makes the oil industry all it can be. It is worth noting Pioneer and Diamondback are not alone. Earlier this year, ConocoPhillips followed up the acquisition of Midland-based Concho Resources with the announcement of $2.5 million in charitable grants and a doubling of its investment in the Permian Strategic Partnership. Concho's legacy is carried on to the relief of many. There are others. If the Reporter-Telegram hasn't told a tale of exceptional philanthropy, community building on par with those previously mentioned, feel free to contact me, sdoreen, at hearstnp.com. The goal isn't to spotlight one or two groups. It is to remind companies with a presence in Midland that while your reinvestment isn't required, it does follow the example set by generations of leaders that put their money where their mouth was when they said Midland can be better. Let's not depart from this column without paying tribute to those that do make a difference, including the PSP and its member companies that have put tens of millions of dollars into education, infrastructure, and health care projects that will set up Midland and the Permian Basin for success today, tomorrow, and 30 years into the future. It is a fascinating time to be in Midland for any number of reasons. Sometimes the change happening today can leave one wondering what's next for our community. However, it is also great to see that sometimes the more things change, the more they stay the same. Energy companies playing a key role in community philanthropy is one example of that. Here's hoping we continue to see that bar raised higher and higher.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. Community. MHS students offer Texas Twist on Holiday Classic by J.C. Lewis. Midland High School theater students had a quick turnaround after Puffs, or seven increasingly eventful years at a certain school of magic and magic, closed on Halloween. This month, the theater program will present A Texas Christmas Carol by Texan Barry Smoot. Smoot attended Abilene Christian University and has been an artistic associate at the landmark Paramount Theater in Abilene since 1992. A Texas Christmas Carol is set in 1933 Texas, in which a failed preacher and his family create a traveling tent revival presentation of the Charles Dickens Christmas story of Ebenezer Scrooge. The family is assisted by a small group of itinerant people they pull into the company as they fashion a simply yet highly theatrical telling of a tale of sin, revelations, and redemption, according to the play's website. We had the right kids and a little something home to West Texas, visual and performing arts director Tiffany Gardner Moore said. It's a warm, fun, and heartfelt story that everyone knows, but provides a twist to the tale. Senior Charlize Turner, who plays a narrator, said she was familiar with A Christmas Carol, and this version has the same aspects. I have listened to A Christmas Carol for every single year of my life. It's kind of a tradition, she said. It has the same aspects as A Christmas Carol, but it's more Western-themed, which makes it so much more exciting to perform. Sophomore Alex Gonzalez, who plays Ebb Scrooge, said he wasn't as familiar with the story. Once I knew for sure we were going to do the production and that I was going to be Scrooge, I watched every remake of it, including the Muppets and animated versions, to prepare my character, he said. Turner said the fast turnaround has been a challenge with trying to perfect their second show of the semester. Gonzalez added that the cast and crew has been really hard working with the transition of shows. Gonzalez said he has played versions of villains in these two shows, but Scrooge is a different type of villain, who is a little more upright than his part in Puffs. Gardner Moore said, "This group of theater students have worked really hard this fall and have also had a lot of success over the past year. They had their first state appearance since 1981 with The Old Man and the Old Moon, which tied for first place," she said. 30 students qualified for nationals with Texas Thespians. She said, "Midlanders will relate to A Texas Christmas Carol, and the shows will be something for the whole family. Showtimes are Thursday and Friday at 7 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. at 906 West Illinois." Midland ISD Holiday Events. Thursday, Bowie Fine Arts Academy Band Performance, grades 4 through 6, 5:30 p.m. at the Bowie Fine Arts Auditorium, 805 Elk Avenue, free. Legacy High School Orchestra presents Marian Bright, a Christmas Spectacular, 6:45 p.m. at the Stan Cobb Auditorium at Legacy High School, 3500 Neely Avenue, free. Friday, Midland High School Theater presents A Texas Christmas Carol, 7 p.m. at the MHS Auditorium, 906 West Illinois. $5 for students, $10 for adults. Tickets are on sale at https://www.midlandhstheater.com/community calendar. Meeting this week, Midland ISD Academic Planning Workshop, 9 a.m. Saturday at the District Service Center, 615 West Missouri. Christmas Parade. The 2021 All-American Christmas Parade, presented by the City of Midland Parks and Recreation Division, will take place at 6:30 p.m. Saturday. MCSO hosting Christmas at the Horseshoe. Midland County Sheriff's Office has partnered with local nonprofit organizations to have Christmas at the Horseshoe. The free event is scheduled to begin at 5 p.m. December 18th. A production takes place at 7 p.m. It will feature Santa Claus, live nativity scene, and arts and crafts. Inner Court and JK Dance Studio will perform their live Christmas music production. MCSO's hope is that as the children exit the doors to go home, they will each leave with a gift, according to a news release from Midland County. Please help by directing our community to drop an unwrapped toy at any listed addresses. Anyone who wishes to donate unwrapped toys for the occasion can drop them off. Toy barrels can be found at Midland County Sheriff's Office, 400 South Main, Midland County Annex Tax Office, 2110 North A, Dollar General, 3305 West Front, Dollar General, 1904 Rankin Highway, Dollar General, 10404 FM 307, and the Mulberry Cafe, 2101 West Wadley, Suite 8. Events. Winter Wonderland West Texas Shopping Expo, Friday and Saturday at the Horseshoe. The 2021 All-American Christmas Parade, presented by the City of Midland Parks and Recreation Division, 6:30 p.m. Saturday. Vinyl Brunch, Holiday Edition, 10:30 a.m. Sunday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Cookies with Santa, 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday at 301 South Carver. Somewhere in Your Silent Night, 3 to 8 p.m. Sunday at First Baptist Church of Midland. Christmas on the Green, 3 p.m. December 18th at 2905 East Highway 80. Night at the Stable, 3 p.m. December 18th at Connection Christian Church. Holiday Hangover Drag Brunch, 1 p.m. December 26th at the Beer Garden. New Year's Eve at Eccentric Brewing, 6 p.m. December 31st at 1402 Cotton Flat Road. Nonprofits. Theater Thursday, Night on Earth, 6 p.m. Thursday at the Sibley Nature Center. Mariachi Christmas, 6:30 p.m. Thursday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. MOSC presents Lone Star Brass, 7:30 p.m. Thursday at Midland College, Wagner Brown Auditorium. Holiday Tea, 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. Friday at the Museum of the Southwest. The 11th Annual Torino's Toy Drive, benefiting High Sky Children's Ranch, Boys and Girls Club, Casa of West Texas, and Toys for Tots, 8 p.m. Friday at Torino's Pizza Bar. Tales and Trails Storytime, 10 a.m. Saturday at the Sibley Nature Center. Trains and Trucks, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Gingerbread Workshop, 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Christmas at the Brown Dorsey Home, 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, 213 Weatherford. Upcycle Christmas Ornament, 3:30 p.m. December 16th at the Midland Downtown Library. Third Thursday Reading Program, 4:30 p.m. December 16th at the Bush Childhood Home. Annual Christmas Community Lunch, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. December 20th at the Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry. Entertainment Calendar. Holiday Recital by the Lone Star Brass, 7:30 p.m. Thursday at the Wagner Brown Auditorium at Midland College. Sam Watson, 8 to 11 p.m. Thursday at the Buffalo Nickel. A Texas Christmas Carol, 7 p.m. December Thursday through Sunday, and 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at Midland High School. Esteban Armado y Los Anchondo, 7 p.m. Friday at La Hacienda Event Center. Basin Big Band Christmas Event, 6:30 to 10 p.m. Saturday at the Petroleum Club of Midland. ZZ Top, 8 p.m. Sunday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Midland Community Bands Christmas Concert, 2:30 p.m. Sunday at the Wagner Brown Auditorium in the Allison Fine Arts Building on Midland College campus. Featured guests are the treble choir from the Young Women's Leadership Academy. Friday, December 10th, from 12 noon to 2 p.m., join us for a meet and greet with local up-and-coming artist Maggie Nelson Walker. Come see our selection of her unique artwork and take home a complimentary hand-signed print. Guests will get a chance to see Maggie reveal her newest piece in the collection. Refreshments will be served at Carter's Furniture, 2101 West Wadley, No. 6 in Midland.
Pfizer says booster protects against Omicron by Lauren Neergaard, AP Medical Writer. Pfizer said Wednesday that a booster of its COVID-19 vaccine may offer important protection against the new Omicron variant, even though the initial two doses appear significantly less effective. Pfizer and its partner BioNTech said that while two doses may not be strong enough to prevent infection, lab tests showed a booster increased by 25-fold people's level of antibodies capable of fighting off Omicron. For people who haven't yet had a booster, the company said two doses still should prevent severe disease or death. Health authorities in the U.S. and other countries have urged eligible people to get a third dose even before these results. Go and get your third boost as soon as possible, Dr. Michael Dalston, Pfizer's chief scientific officer, told the Associated Press. This is comforting and a very positive message that we now have a plan that will induce immunity that is likely to protect from infection, symptomatic illness, and severe disease from now across the entire winter season. President Joe Biden said the Pfizer booster finding is very encouraging, although he cautioned that's the lab report. There's more studies going on. Pfizer and BioNTech tested blood samples taken a month after a booster and found people harbored levels of Omicron-neutralizing antibodies that were similar to amounts proven protective against earlier variants after two doses. For the lab tests, researchers grew samples of so-called pseudoviruses that hold the worrisome new mutations. Scientists don't yet know how big a threat the Omicron variant really is. Currently, the extra-contagious Delta variant is responsible for most of the COVID-19 cases in the U.S. and other countries. But the Omicron variant, discovered late last month, carries an unusually large number of mutations, and scientists are racing to learn how easily it spreads. Whether it causes illness that is more serious or milder than other coronavirus types, and how much it might evade the protection of prior vaccinations. Pfizer's findings, announced in a press release, are preliminary and haven't yet undergone scientific review, but they're the first from a vaccine maker examining whether the booster doses that health authorities are urging people to get may indeed make a key difference. Moderna and Johnson & Johnson also are testing how their vaccines may hold up. But health authorities will be closely watching for real-world evidence of how Omicron spreads in highly vaccinated populations. If it becomes dominant and causes serious illness, then regulators will have to decide whether vaccines should be tweaked to better match Omicron, changes to the recipe that manufacturers already are beginning, just in case. Scientists have speculated that the high jump in antibodies that comes with a third dose of current COVID-19 vaccines might be enough to counter any decrease in effectiveness. Antibody levels predict how well a vaccine may prevent infection with the coronavirus, but they are just one layer of the immune system's defenses. Pfizer said two doses of the vaccine should still protect against severe disease because Omicron's mutations don't appear to hamper another defense, T-cells that fight the virus after infection sets in. Synergy Odessa Showing Yellowstone by J.C. Lewis. Catch up with the whole Dutton crew on the big screen at Synergy Odessa. The movie theater is showing new Yellowstone episodes at 7 p.m. on Sundays for free, but seating is limited, according to Synergy's website. Viewers can also order off a special Yellowstone Cowboys menu, which includes Dutton's nachos, shredded smoked brisket, queso, red onions, jalapenos, barbecue sauce, and crema, cowboy brisket sandwich, shredded brisket served on a brioche bun with pickles and red onions on the side, cinnamon spurs, mini churros sprinkled with cinnamon sugar, rattlesnake bites, golden fried jalapeno poppers, and the cattleman's burger, pulled pork, thick-cut bacon, white American cheese, crispy onion strings, grilled onions, barbecue sauce, and smoky slaw.
MHS presents A Texas Christmas Carol. Cast. Narrators, Charlize Turner and Brianna Rivera. Eb Scrooge, Alex Gonzalez. Joe Frank Fezziwig and Bob Cratchit. Zaniel Watts, Ethel Cratchit, Melody Adesheim, Jim Bob Cratchit, Sam Andrews, Joe Bob Cratchit, Leah Strickland, K. Bob Cratchit, Macy Calloway, Tiny Tim Bob Cratchit, Kara Moore, Cactus Carter, Aldo Sanchez, Ed Branson, and the radio announcer Jacob Yeasel. Ghosty of Christmas Past and Guitar, Colton Wilson. Jacob Marley Scrooge, Jet Wood. Grover Cleveland LaRue and Cowboy Date Blaine Wheelis. And Cowboy Dale Blaine Wheelis. Cowgirl Kelly and Fanny Paislin Allred. Ghosty of Christmas Present, Dash Hutt. Goldie Jade Lang. Frankie Sense, Lila Horner, Mary Edna and Myrrh, Brinkley Fairchild, Ghosty of Christmas Future, Aaron Velasquez. Floral Clump, Mariah Singer. Miss Emmy, Eliza Diaz. Eunice Fezziwig, S.J. Skies. Luke McGuire, Collins Smith. Sissy McGuire, Lottie Mae Bobo. Young Scrooge, Ryan Perez. Isabel, Madison Boozer. And Boy Scrooge, Evan Gonzalez.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday. Opinion Extra. Mandate Unhelpful to City's Healthcare by Stuart Doreen. The courts gave Midland Memorial Hospital a needed break during the COVID pandemic. Our community found out Tuesday that Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has suspended enforcement of its vaccine mandate. The federal government did so not because the idea would have handicapped hospitals across the region and nation, but because the first set of our court rulings sided with legal challenges to the Biden administration's order. We really didn't think that the mandate was accomplishing a lot other than giving us some potential staffing challenges, Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday. As we've seen, as the Delta variant has evolved and we've learned more and more, most people in our community are vaccinated or have had the disease. Vaccination is not a certain preventer of the transmission of the disease. It makes it less likely, but it doesn't eliminate the possibility of someone being a carrier and transmitting it. So with the high levels of vaccination we had among our workforce, now estimated at about 78%, there wasn't a whole lot to be gained by vaccination mandate, and we would be very pleased to see that stay off the books. Amen. How is it that the federal government can't see that? How is it that the federal government wishes to put hospitals, like those in West Texas, behind the eight ball when the next pandemic takes place? There are areas of the country where hospitals are struggling with human capital, especially nurses and respiratory therapists. The COVID pandemic has brought more attention to the traveling provider industry, where those qualified to respond to calls from understaffed areas. They get top dollar compared to those permanently employed at hospitals like Midland Memorial. Myers said Tuesday there were 126 traveling providers currently on the books at MMH. That dependency on those staying in our area for months at a time is a healthcare reality in the region, he said. Midlanders should appreciate efforts to grow our own number of healthcare providers at schools in the region. Those efforts will pay off in the long term. We also should appreciate that the hospital is making sure staffing is taking place, no matter the level of COVID cases in the community. On Wednesday morning, that number was 42, a lower total going back to last August. It is worth noting that even with a lower COVID count, nearly 90% of the available 248 inpatient rooms at Midland Memorial were occupied. I think we are in a position to lose some important employees had the vaccination mandate gone through simply because of that personal liberty stance, Meyer said. And given the limited value of the mandate, that was not a good trade. We certainly want to keep our people working and caring for the people we serve here in the community. The Biden mandate would have made it more difficult for hospitals to take care of their patients, no matter their reason for hospitalization. Let's hope that further court rulings continue to favor those people and entities taking care of the sickest people in the community. Here's hoping our president and the federal government drop the mandates. They weren't a benefit to health care in our region, and our workers deserved a break.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, December 9th. Alma Louise White peacefully passed away December 3rd in Midland at the age of 99 after a long, loving, and full life. Louise was born in Lorain, Texas, to Eunice and Milton Hamilton on March 5th, 1922. Louise graduated from Pecos High School and shortly after married Alma Ray White of Mentone. After marrying in 1940, Louise and Ray lived in the Grand Falls royalty area until moving to Monahans in 1953. Louise is preceded in death by her husband, Ray White, her brother, James Hamilton, and sisters Lucille Telly, Wanda Haynes, Dolores Walker, and Doris Keplinger. Louise is survived by Robert and Janine White of Clifton, Texas, Cecil and Marvelyn White of Heath, Texas, Johnny and Gail White of Orange, California, Bobby White of Monahans, and sisters Joe Potillo of San Angelo, and Evelyn Connie of Midland, along with 51 grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. Viewing will be all day with visitation time from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, December 10th, at Harkey Funeral Home in Monahans, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 11th, at the First Baptist Church with Chris Powell officiating. Graveside will be a private event for family only. If you wish to send flowers or plants, they can be sent to Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans. Visit the website harkeyfunerals.com to sign the guestbook or leave a personal note for the family. Dr. Patrick Y. Leung, age 79, of Midland, passed away peacefully on Tuesday, December 6, surrounded by his family, after a slow decline of his health over the last year. Rosary service will be held on Thursday, December 9, at 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held on Friday, December 10, at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, with interment to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Dr. Leung was born on December 21, 1941, in Hong Kong, the second eldest of seven children. He is preceded in death by his father, Nu Leung, and mother, Chen Ho Man, his older sister, Yuk Lin Ho, and younger sister, Juliana Apple Leung. He is survived by his wife, Nancy Leung, of 55 years, children, Dr. Karen Leung, Dr. Christina Leung, and Dr. Michael Leung, and his eight grandchildren, his brother, Dick Leung of Acton, Massachusetts, sisters, Clara Poland of Plymouth, United Kingdom, Cecilia Yoon of Burnaby, British Columbia, and Perpetua So of Auckland, New Zealand. The family suggests memorials in lieu of flowers be donated to his alma mater, the University of Alberta School of Medicine. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Gabriel Curtis Gonzalez was born on August 29, 1985, in Trinidad, Colorado. He attended Aguilar High School, where he played on the football, basketball, and baseball teams. He married the love of his life, Tamara Patterson, on July 8, 2006, in Gulnar, Colorado. Gabriel is survived by his wife, Tamara Gonzalez, his daughters, Madison Gonzalez and Ashton Gonzalez, his parents, Donald and Charlene Gonzalez, his mother, Rainey Ortiz, Jim Zemla, his siblings, Thomas Gonzalez, Belinda Escalante, April Gonzalez, Charles Padilla, Robert Padilla, his grandparents, Anita and John Boyer, Ida and Luis Gallegos, and numerous other family members and friends. Gabriel is preceded in death by his grandfathers, Robert Larson and Ben Ortiz, and numerous other extended family members. A rosary will be held on Friday, December 10th at 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. Celebration of Life will be held on Saturday, December 11th at 10 a.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. Celebration of Life is pending in Colorado. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Laurel Mendoza Baeza, age 83, of Midland, passed away on December 6th. Laura was born in La Villa de Ojinaga in Chihuahua, Mexico, to Sylvester Baeza Rubio and Manuela Mendoza on October 18, 1938. He met the love of his life, his everything, our mother, Maria Zuniga. He is survived by his three sisters, Mary Mata, Aurora Zamora, Rosa Perryman, and one brother, Jesus Martinez. He is preceded in death by his loving wife, Maria Zuniga Baeza, his parents, Sylvester Baeza Rubio and Manuela Mendoza, two sisters, Angelica Galindo and Modesta Urias. Viewing will be Friday, December 10th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Rosary will be Friday, December 10th, at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home at 2508 North Big Spring Street in Midland. A funeral mass has been set for Saturday, December 11th, officiated by Father Felix Hirschbaum at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine at 1401 Garden Lane in Midland, 79701. Burial to follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Melba Ruth Malone, age 89, of Midland, passed away Saturday, December 4th, at her home. Services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 11th, at Bellevue Baptist Church in Midland. Melba was born in Abilene, Texas, on February 24th, 1932, to David L. and Ida Mae Talent. She married L.E. Doc Malone on July 24th, 1954, and moved to Midland in 1956. Melba is preceded in death by her husband in 2007. She is survived by one brother, Glenn Talent, and his wife Nancy of Abilene, Texas, a sister, Patricia Mead of Beaumont, Texas, her son, Scott Malone, and his wife Diane of Odessa, daughters Suzanne Kyle and her husband James of North Richland Hills, Texas, and Sandra Malone of Midland, five grandchildren, and two great-grandsons. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to Kind Keepers Hospice of Midland or Bellevue Baptist Church. Nicholas Nick Rodriguez, Jr., age 76, passed away on December 3rd in Midland. Nick was born in Midland to Dominga and Nicholas Rodriguez on September 28, 1945. He was preceded in death by his parents and by his wife, Mary Alina, and his brother, Ernesto. Survivors include his brother, Rosendo Rodriguez, five children, Nicholas Rodriguez III and wife, Tressa of Midland, Sandra Diaz and husband Jesus of Edmond, Oklahoma, Yvonne Rodriguez of Midland, Joanne Rios and husband Robert of Midland, and Dolores Ramirez of Midland. He is also survived by several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A graveside service will be held at American Heritage Cemetery on Friday, December 10th at 11 a.m. Arrangements are by Midland Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Ruben U. Hernandez, age 73, of Midland, passed away on December 6th. Rubin was born on April 9, 1948, in Midland, to Gennaro and Martha Hernandez. He grew up in Midland, doing various jobs. Being a truck driver was his favorite job. He is survived by his daughter, Connie Hernandez, sons Ruben Laura, Sonny Hernandez, Paul Hernandez, 6 grandchildren, 17 great-grandchildren, and 4 great-great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents, by his brothers Rosendo Collazo, Gregorio Collazo, Firmin Hernandez, sister Victoria Lara, and grandson William Mancha. Funeral Mass is set for Thursday, December 9th at 2 p.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Bernice M. Bauer, 4 days shy of her 100th birthday, passed away on Wednesday, December 8th, surrounded by her family. The family will receive friends on Friday, December 10th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, December 11th at 1 p.m. at Westside Church of Christ. Burial will be held on Tuesday, December 14th at 1:30 p.m. at Fort Bliss National Cemetery in El Paso, Texas. Garfield Wesley Bess, age 85, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, November 30th. Viewing will be Thursday, December 9th, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A graveside service will be Friday, December 10th, at 11 a.m. at Fairview Cemetery. He is survived by 3 sons, Wayne Bess, John Bess, and John Wayne Swindell, 2 brothers, Stanley French and Lester Rollison Jr., several grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren.
Good morning. This is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today is Thursday, December 9th, 2021. Medical examiner details autopsies in Paul Vaughn murder trial. After Wednesday's lunch break, the deputy medical examiner for the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office was called to the stand in the trial of Fabian Paul Vaughn, who is accused of gunning down his wife and her friend at an Odessa car wash in 2019. The trial will resume this morning at 9 a.m. in District Judge Justin Lowe's 161st Court. Dr. Tasha Z. Greenberg, the deputy medical examiner for the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office, detailed 36-year-old Joseph Granado was shot twice, while Tiffany Paul Vaughn was shot at least 8 times, but she stated that it could have been 9, as one of the gunshots could have entered and exited her left arm and then re-entered the left side of her body. While autopsy photographs of Tiffany Paul Vaughn were being shown to the jury, the people who were sitting in the courtroom gallery, Fabian Paul Vaughn kept his head down. The only time Fabian Paul Vaughn spoke was when he was admonished by Judge Lowe. The admonishment was Paul Vaughn's choice to take the stand and be questioned. Greenberg, who has held a Doctor of Medicine degree since 1996 and forensic pathology since 2001, said she has performed thousands of autopsies, which includes the autopsies for Granado and Tiffany Paul Vaughn. Greenberg ruled the cause of death for Granado and Tiffany Paul Vaughn was gunshots. Greenberg stated Granado was shot in the face and in the chest, while Tiffany Paul Vaughn had gunshots located in her left jaw, upper chest, arm, shoulder, and back, All bullets that struck Tiffany Paul Vaughn entered and exited her body, except for one that entered her lower right jaw and stopped in her upper jaw. That knocked out multiple upper teeth. The bullet that entered Granado's right chin was found in his shoulder. After Greenberg was called, the defense called its first witness, which was Valente Paul Vaughn, the older brother of Fabian Paul Vaughn. Valente Paul Vaughn testified that he dated Tiffany Paul Vaughn's cousin, Linda Hinojos, who testified on Tuesday. Valente Paul Vaughn testified the relationship between he and Hinojos lasted nearly 10 years. Valente Paul Vaughn also testified that Tiffany Paul Vaughn would get violent and hit her younger brother. When questioned by the defense, Valente Paul Vaughn said he saw Tiffany Paul Vaughn push his younger brother and she would get physically violent. During cross-examination, Valente Paul Vaughn was asked if his brother was institutionalized. There was immediate objection from the defense, but Lowe allowed the question as Fabian Paul Vaughn pleaded not guilty for reason of insanity on Tuesday. Valente Paul Vaughn testified to his knowledge his younger brother hadn't been institutionalized. After Valente Paul Vaughn was questioned, Judge Lowe sent the jury back into the jury room and Valente Paul Vaughn was taken into custody by the Ector County Sheriff's Office for two outstanding warrants. The warrants were for harassment and criminal trespass. As of early Wednesday evening, Valente Paul Vaughn was in intake at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. In the morning session of Wednesday's trial, there were three Odessa Police Department officers questioned. The three OPD officers were Caitlin Paredes, Samuel Chavez, and Justin Cade. An earlier Odessa American article reported that a probable cause affidavit detailed that a witness saw a white Ford F-350 pickup collided with a black Cadillac Escalade on November 26, 2019, that was parked on the north side of the Apex Car Wash parking lot located at 2357 East 8th Street. After the pickup collided with the Escalade, the witness said the suspect, who was later identified as Fabian Paul Vaughn, exited the pickup and walked to the Escalade and used a handgun to shoot Granado multiple times as he was exiting the passenger side of the Escalade. Video surveillance showed, after he shot Granado, that he walked to the driver's side and shot his wife through the window, which struck her several times. The affidavit stated that Fabian Paul Vaughn pulled his wife from the car and onto the ground and then left the scene. It was reported by the Odessa American that on November 27, 2019, Paul Vaughn's father, identified as Valente Paul Vaughn Rodriguez, contacted OPD and stated that his son had contacted him and wanted to turn himself in, the affidavit stated. Rodriguez also stated that he had confessed to him that he shot his wife and Granado.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.